What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Canucks Insider. And as you told me to say yesterday, huge geek.
I don't think that's what I told you to say, but
Canucks Insider and also massive geek, Thomas Trantz, my co-host here alongside me. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. No, I have to keep up with Canucks Insider. You were dropping some insidery nuggets in your latest piece at The Athletic.
Was I?
Yeah, something about, well, I'd have to go back and check, but I read it at the time, and I was like, yeah, there, insider work. I think there's something about Joshua wants to sign with the Canucks, or his preference.
Wow. He played 19 minutes last night. The coach loves him.
Yeah, but that was insider reporting.
He's had opportunities never dreamed of. I mean, no, yeah, sure. You know what? You're right.
I love how you're like, no, I'm not an insider.
Yeah, I'm really uncomfortable with the label.
Just telling you, man. The proof's out there.
Fair enough.
Proof's in the work.
You know what? You're right. That was good info.
Yeah, there you go. So you've justified the insider label for another day.
Huzzah.
You did it. All right. As mentioned, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll do a Thursday edition of the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. In about 5 minutes here, Jeremy Colliton, Abbotsford Canucks head coach, will join us at 1 for the Abbey Report. Looking forward to that.
So I was at a bachelor party in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekend, and I flew home bright and early Sunday morning, and as you'd expect, after 3 days at a bachelor party, I was in
great
condition.
Yep.
Sitting at the gate, and the entire Abbotsford Canucks team arrives, including our guest, Jeremy Collins.
There you go.
Who I chatted with, and yeah, I'll be in much finer form for this conversation.
So you made a great impression, is what you're saying.
Well, me and Jeremy know each other a little bit, so yeah. It was okay, but yeah. Like, I just fessed up to it immediately, and then it was fine.
That's fine.
Yeah.
All right, so always a pleasure to chat
but
with...
But I was playing incredibly guilty, so I'm excited to have, like, a coherent conversation.
Yes. Yeah, it's always fun to chat with Jeremy, and especially, I mean, lots going on. They've clinched a playoff spot out in Abbotsford, and then also integrating Lekaramäki and Pettersson into the lineup. Fascinating as well right now for that, for the Abbotsford Canucks.
And they're playing great hockey. Atu Ratu on a tear. Mm. I mean, there's a ton of stuff. You know, even Aiden McDonough, like, this is, we'll talk to him about it, but one thing about the American League, you know, Ryan Johnson likes to say that they call it a Christmas league.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of can't judge rookies on their first couple months. I mean, if a rookie comes in and has a great first couple months, that's a fantastic sign. But for your average player, it's going to be tough. You know, Aiden McDonough's first few months of the season were incredibly quiet. I mean, he had like 3 points in his first 10 games, and he had a 2-point game, and then had another 2 points in his next 10 games. But all of a sudden, you know, across the last 11 or 12 games, you're looking at a guy who's had like 8 points, multiple 2-point games, multiple 2-goal games. Like, you're seeing a guy who's beginning to produce the way that, you know, I thought he had a chance to, given his college production and overall athleticism and skill set. So I'm even curious to get his thoughts on a strong second half from McDonough.
Lots to get into with Jeremy Colliton. That's
scintillating.
One.
How about that as a
what
tease.
A teaser. Woo! Right there. Well, even Archer Seelovs, right? Coming up and helping the team, the big team now, get two wins, as he did last night.
We'll get into that. I think Seelovs is fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot to get into there. But before we get on with Donnie and Dolly, as mentioned, Canucks beat Arizona 2-1 at Mullet Arena last night. Not a masterpiece. They needed a late goal to overcome the lowly Arizona Coyotes. But the key is, we talked about it at length on the show yesterday, they get the 2 points. They took care of business, controlled what they could control. Dallas did them a favor as well by beating Edmonton. So you escape with the 2 points.
Beating them like a drum.
Dallas annihilates Edmonton, and all of a sudden you are much more comfortably in the driver's seat for the Pacific Division.
So I love a two-screen game night. Especially when I'm not on the road and I get to do it from home, which, you know, doesn't happen that often for me. But last night, two-screen game, Oilers game on my iPad, got the Canucks game on the big screen. And the Stars' ability to attack with multiple lines with speed off the rush is a nightmare matchup. The Oilers' defense, I don't know if there's enough speed there. Like, I don't think there's a lot of teams that can expose the Oilers like that. Like, I don't even think maybe the Avs, but the Avs really have, like, one dangerous rush five-man unit. And it's not that the Oilers don't have players that can keep up. It's that when you're doing it with your second and third and fourth line, like when you've got Sam Steele doing it in fourth line minutes, I just think it's too much for them. And, you know, this is one thing that, like, I was watching that second period unfold, and I was watching Soucy get beat out wide a couple times by the Coyotes, and then I sort of started going over the West, right? I'm like, who has a defense that can actually skate with the fact that, like, Dallas has guys like Duchesne in the middle six, and guys like Stankoven and Wyatt Johnston in the middle six, and guys like Sam Steele on the fourth line? Like, who actually has a defense? Because, you know, I don't know if Vegas does.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dallas, like, is just so deep up front. And I think you were already
so deep and so fast.
Yeah. But to me, it's the speed helps, but it's just the depth that they have. Like, they basically have 9 legitimate top six forwards. Now that they've brought Stankoven up, right? And you look at what everyone else is doing production wise and has done production wise, it's an embarrassment of riches that they have up front in that lineup.
Yeah. Well, so I think I was pretty low on the Stars historically. I had a long standing fade position on them. But one thing that I was saying a lot during the pandemic, right, was like, you're going to get some team. And the analogy that I used was the Manchester United class of 92, which was like Roy Keane, Ryan Giggs, sure, David Beckham, just like this insane infusion of youth right at the dawn of the Premier League era. And Alex Ferguson obviously rides hard for 20 years off the back of that group of young players. I always thought there would be some team in the draft that hit on multiple game changers in that 2021 draft where, like, OHL players hadn't played.
Yeah. And
I talked about it a lot because I actually kind of liked the Canucks pick in the sixth round. They didn't end up signing him, and I think he recently had some legal issues. But
Connor Lockhart.
Because Lockhart was this, like, elite priority player, one of the top picks in the priority draft. Didn't work out, but I liked the bet that, like, hey, there's going to be some weirdness here. But you hit on Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven in the first two rounds of that draft as a team that's already good.
Well, and that's, of course, just 4 years after you went Heiskanen, Ottinger, Robertson in a draft as well, which
that's
is pretty
wild.
Good. Pretty good. And then 4 years later, you do that.
That was an incredible performance. So, but that Johnston's, like, Johnston played 7 games in his draft year. I know Oilers fans are all upset about the Borgo pick, but it's like he played 7 games. Stankoven played 6. They got 2 game changers who played a combined 13 games in their draft years.
Yeah,
now, we knew Stankoven was going to be good, but come on. Anyway, sorry, we can start the crossover.
All right, let's get into it. We're doing it on Thursday this week. It's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. Don, Rick, thanks for doing this on a Thursday, guys. How are you?
No problem.
Good.
We understand you have the same engineers working there that we have here. Technical difficulties yesterday. Lucky for you guys, we're used to that sort of thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, yeah, believe me, we're used to it here as well.
And thanks for your patience in joining us today. We appreciate it.
I already said that, but that's fine.
No problem.
I don't know. I was doing a bit from our last crossover.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad that was intentional. All right, let's get into it. So the Canucks win last night. Maybe not the prettiest win we've seen all season, but they get the job done. They take the 2 points. Quinn Hughes was absolutely exceptional in that game, especially setting up the late goal, the winning goal from Connor Garland. I know you guys had the poll question. Is Quinn Hughes a lock for the Norris at this point? I mean, I certainly think he should be. I think it's pretty clear cut, but what do you guys think? Is he pretty much officially going to take home this award now?
Well, it's interesting because I can't remember the results, Rick, but it was like 55-45.
Wow.
Good math there, Don. But it was more people saying no than we thought.
Yeah.
And then looking at the comments, the no's had more to do with, or less to do with, he's a great defenseman and he deserves it, and more to do with the old talk about Eastern bias when it comes to the voters, which I don't know how you guys feel, but it's kind of inexcusable these days given social media and the internet, that you should be able more than ever to be able to keep up on things. But I was a little bit surprised by those results.
He should win it, guys. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, how he gets away from defenders at the blue line is amazing. Skating, the skill, the smarts. We have never had a defenseman in the city that beats players one-on-one like Quinn Hughes. 86 points, you know he's going to hit 90. He's got to be the leading candidate right now. I know Cale Makar fans, he's played 5 or 6 games fewer, I get that. But as Donnie mentioned on the show, Hughes is a whopping plus 39 as well. What was Makar? Plus 13?
Plus 13, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's his overall game. I mean, he's improved defensively. The 70 assists, I just don't know how. And the Eastern bias, if it comes in, I don't know enough about the voting. All we know, and we have said in this city for years and years and years, is that when the Canucks play at 7:30 or 7 or whatever it is over the last 20, 30 years, the Eastern writers are in bed and they're sleeping. You know, that was the big cry, even back when Pavel Bure was doing what he was doing and all the Canuck greats of the past. We always heard that, the Eastern bias, and it's always going to be there. But I don't think, and nowadays, Donnie made a good point. These Eastern writers can wake up in the morning and they've got their cell phones and laptops, and you can see what Quinn Hughes did the night before, you know, and it's all there for you. So there is no excuse for this kid not to win it.
What I can't believe about Quinn Hughes is that he's just so good and was so good from, you know, game one against the Los Angeles Kings and, you know, setting up Brock Besser for a goal way back when. And he's gotten better.
Yeah.
Yes.
That move he makes, and I'm sure you guys have noticed, that move he makes to his left that I think teams are on to a little bit, but it wasn't there before. And it was effective last night. He pulled it off last night. And his shot is way better. Mm-hmm. And one of our viewers pointed this out today. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but they were wondering, and it wasn't just one. It was more than one person wondering if that goal by Garland last night wasn't something that Quinn Hughes thought about.
Yeah.
Off the boards to Garland. I mean, he's so good, you wouldn't put it past him. That's how special he is that people are wondering, did he plan that? Did he think about that?
He's a maestro, without question. And you guys are right. Not only should he win the Norris, I don't think there's a good faith argument to be made against him. I think this is as open shut as any Norris race that I've seen in several years, and the betting markets reflect it.
The other thing I'll point out is on the Eastern bias thing is, you know, Cale Makar's not out east. Like, Roman Josi, I guess, is a little easier, but not exactly a mega media market, right? So I don't think it should prevent him from winning.
I actually have the numbers in front of me because this is something I've been tracking ever since Drew Doughty called it out 10 years ago. In 2014, Drew Doughty called out that he didn't think he was getting enough Norris consideration because he played for the LA Kings in the Pacific time zone. At the time that he made that comment, so that's literally 2014, only one defender playing in the Pacific time zone in 40 years had won the Norris. That's Rob Blake in 1998. And only 5 of the 40 had played west of Chicago. Wow. Al MacInnis, Blake, Chris Pronger, and Paul Coffey. Oh. Now, in the 10 years since... In the 10 years since, we've seen Brent Burns win it in San Jose. We've seen Erik Karlsson win it in San Jose. We've seen Mark Giordano win it in California. Or Calgary. Excuse me. We've seen Makar win it in Colorado. We've seen Josi win it. And we've seen Doughty win it from the Pacific. So 6 of the last 10 have played west of Chicago, including several from the Pacific time zone. So I do think with the accessibility of games, it has changed. Quinn Hughes is going to win this. Yep. He deserves to win it. You know, Cale Makar making the scoring race close, I can see why there'd be some white knuckling in the Vancouver market. But if you're watching these two teams play at any length of time, like, MacKinnon's the primary driver for the Avs. Hughes is the primary driver for the Canucks.
He has the puck all the time.
Yeah,
and people wonder about his defense. And I know it's cliche to say, but the best defense is a good offense. The guy has the puck all the time. No, that's not a bad defense. It's not a bad way to keep the puck out of your own net.
And he's always getting better. Look at the offseason. When you look at the traits of successful elite athletes, he nails all of them. You know, he wants more responsibility. He tells the coaches every year, give me more responsibility. His offseason is just getting better, working on his shot, working on his skating. This guy, he's just a – you know what he is? He's a dream – draft pick, and you wish every draft pick was like this guy.
I just love players who maybe they have, you know, when you're dealing with kids and they want to work on what they're already good at.
That, right.
You know, you have a good skater who hasn't got a great shot. He wants to work on his skating because he can show. Quinn Hughes knew that maybe one of the flaws in his game, not the greatest shot in the world. Look what's happening right now. Yep. He's clearly improved it. You just love guys like that. Crosby's like that.
Doubled his career high in goals this year, went from 8 to 16. And it's the improved shot, and I think the mentality, too. He's changed his mentality, looking to get into those areas to be more dangerous and threatening to score goals himself. Another player who's had a big impact over the last few games for the Canucks, Dakota Joshua, returning from injury, and just immediately, I think, showing everyone how much this team missed him. His minutes are up. He's playing alongside JT Miller. He's on the penalty kill, getting some net front power play time. And, of course, he's an unrestricted free agent as well. Now, our colleague Ian McIntyre just had an interview with Jim Rutherford up at Sportsnet.ca. He asks Rutherford, is it fair to say that Dakota Joshua is at the top of your list? Rutherford responds, yes, I would say he's a priority for us. We can all see how important he is, but I know he's going to be expensive too. Rick, where do you see this going? Is there a chance he signs at some point here before unrestricted free agency?
Well, he's at the top of my list to get done, and he's at the Canucks' top of their list as well to get done. His agent has shut me out. He's not returning my text in the last 24 hours, so that
hey, you haven't seen him out walking his dog?
Something. No, I was texting with him after the Ducks game, and he was all happy as can be. And in the last 24 hours, he's kind of he's ducking me, which is I've been around the biz enough to know that when an agent yep. stops texting you, they're, you know, he's a little bit busy. He might be trying to negotiate a contract. Look, he has put himself in a position to get a nice raise. He has given his agent enough ammunition to go get that raise. If the Vancouver Canucks think they're getting Dakota Joshua on the twos, they're not. That's not happening. It's a number that's going to be over three. He'll easily get that on July 1st. Every team is looking for a guy that's big, soft hands, kills penalties, and sticks up for his teammates. He does all that. It's one of he's a late bloomer. He's 27. He's figured it out. Other teams around the league have noticed this guy's figured it out. Every team's looking for a guy like this. He's put himself in a nice position, but I would be surprised if the Vancouver Canucks let him get to July 1st.
Yeah, there's not much that he doesn't do. You mentioned standing up for his teammates almost to a fault when it comes to what happened with his broken pinky, but his hands, the between the legs goal the other day, and it's not the first goal where he's displayed these really quick, soft hands in front of the net, and I'm not sure anybody knew about that. Maybe not even the St. Louis Blues. Or Toronto Maple Leafs, who let's face it, they gave up on him. He's been really impressive.
Donnie, a big guy with soft hands. Come on.
It doesn't get any better than that, right, Rick?
Hockey perspective. Hey, all teams are looking for that. Come on. Big guy, 6'4", 220, soft hands.
Soft hands. I think everyone's looking for a big guy with soft hands, Rick.
Hold it, Thomas, because you texted me the other night, and we were texting back and forth, and you thought, which we disagreed with, you thought that Joshua could get possibly to $4 million.
I absolutely believe that.
I don't see that.
Not from the Canucks. I don't think the Canucks would go there, but I think other teams would.
No, they can't go. They can't go there.
I agree.
They
with
can't
you.
Go there.
That's what I was telling you.
They just gave Pettersson a huge raise, and Hronek's going to get a huge raise. You can't give everybody $4 million, a $3 million raise, Thomas.
I think $3 million is like an absolute floor for Joshua's next deal. You know, here's the thing.
I agree.
If you're talking about players who signed as unrestricted free agents, so taking the Voronkov tier guys off the table, I just wanted to bring that up. Can you pronounce Voronkov for me, Rick? Taking that tier of
who?
taking that tier of guy
he's not
off
listening.
The table.
How can you pronounce
the entry level guys? There's 23 forwards in the NHL. Okay, 23 forwards in the NHL who signed as UFAs are 6'2 or over, are over 180 pounds, and scored 15 goals. Only one of them makes under $1 million. It's Dakota Joshua. Only one more makes under $2 million, and that's Sean Monahan, who signed a one-year deal for injury concern-related reasons and will definitely be back over three again. And only one more makes under $3 million. It's Nick Bjugstad. I mean, you know, this type of player comes in at $3 million always. Nick Paul, Pierre Engvall, Marchment. Yeah. I mean, go down the list. These guys all make $3 million at least. And when you sort of account for the fact that Joshua's become this excellent penalty killer, right? That he's one of the top hitters in the league, that he's scored 10 goals in consecutive seasons, and that he's brought like size and bite to a winning team on the third line and last night playing top line minutes. That to me, that's exactly the type of player that someone, if he hits the open market, is going to go to the nth degree to try and land, even if it means paying him as much as $4 million. I think that's open shut, Rick. I don't even think that should be a controversial take.
Yeah, I'm not there. I don't see four. But if you see four, Thomas, and the other one.
But Thomas says from a Canuck point of view, absolutely. But other teams would be willing to pay him.
He makes it to July 1.
You just mentioned a couple of things there. Like, did he look out of place playing with Garland and Miller last night? That line was really noticeable when they were on the ice. That was a great move by Rick Tocchet. And then you talked about something else there. Great job, Thomas, by the way. Penalty killing. And that, you know, that's been a sore spot for the Canucks for a long time. He's got that reach, and I absolutely.
And the other
I could see another team offering him a lot of money.
And Don, the other one Thomas mentioned is hits. He leads the Canucks with 210 hits. That's with 6 weeks out.
Yeah.
So when he was out for 6 weeks, nobody surpassed him in hits. That's very interesting as well. I'm sure something his agent will use as he negotiates.
The other thing I'll throw in there, right, we've seen his minutes spike way up, especially since he's come back now. Tocchet obviously loves the player, trusts the player, and, you know, his role is only going to increase, I got to think, come the playoffs. Like, this is the type of player that Tocchet is going to love to put over the boards in the playoffs, and that could set him up to do even more to raise his profile going into unrestricted free agency, right, if he has a couple big playoff moments.
Rick, do you think that this has a shot at getting done before the end of the season, or is this one more likely to wait until after the end of the year?
Sure it does. The reason it has a chance to get done is because he's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And they're talking to all agents. And here's the bad thing for the Canucks. There's a good thing and a bad thing for the Canucks with the UFAs. First of all, no one's going to take a pay cut because they feel all the UFA, their agents and players, they feel we've contributed to the Canucks' success this year. So none of them want to take a pay cut. That's problem one. But the good thing for the Canucks is they all want to come back. And that wasn't the case here 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. UFAs couldn't wait to get out of Dodge. They couldn't wait to get out of town. And, you know, and that's not the case. I think that with this new management team, new coaching team, Abbotsford's a great setup. I think the perception of Vancouver has changed around the league and around players. And I think players want to come back here. And if they really, really, really want to come back to Vancouver, then they will, they'll figure out a way to do it.
You know who else I think could be big for them in the playoffs, and I don't know about you. I know he hasn't got a goal yet, but and maybe he won't even play. Maybe he'll be scratched. But I don't know how you guys feel. But Colson lately, I noticed him. He's driving the net. He should have at the very least drawn a penalty. Dylan Gunther tackled him yesterday, and somehow that didn't get
that
called. I thought he was on the verge of getting his first goal. I'm noticing that guy out there, kind of somewhat in that Joshua mold, maybe without the hands, but he hits people, he gets in people's face. I could see him doing something if he's around in the postseason. Maybe I'm out to lunch there.
No, Don, I think you're onto something, and I think it's telling that we've seen Rick Tocchet try a bunch of different things, take guys in and out of the lineup, right? Phil DiGiuseppe, Niels Amon, Arshdeep Bains, Pugh Suter last night, but Pod Colson hasn't come out. So I think he's clearly kind of established himself as, you know, one of the 10 best forwards in Rick Tocchet's mind, and I think that's going to translate to opportunity come playoff time.
I'd
like to see more off.
No, you go.
Sure.
You go.
I'd like to see more offense. I'd like to see more offense. He is a 10th overall pick.
Yeah, but that's out the door now.
But it is what it is. Okay, so the window now and the ceiling for him is a bottom six guy. So we just got to accept it. I love the physicality. 5 hits last night. He was tied with Joshua for the most for all forwards. I love the physicality.
That's every night.
I know, and I love the size. But I would like to see Donnie, a 10th overall pick, get a few more points. But if those points aren't going to be there, and this is the window and the ceiling, so be it.
Yeah, he can still help the team win. And one thing that's been interesting about Pod Colson, because I agree with you, Donnie, I've been really impressed. There have been a lot of good plays, right? A lot of dangerous-looking attacks that he contributes to or helps build up that end up not contributing anything to the bottom line. And that's kind of been the tale for Pod Colson at various levels until the playoffs hit, right? So you look at 2020, he was in the KHL. He has 8 points in 30 games. Playoff start, 3 points and four for SKA St. Petersburg. The next year, he has 11 points in 35 games. Then the playoffs hit, 11 points in 16 games. And even last year in Abbotsford, he had 26 points for the Canucks. He was point per game in the playoffs. This guy does seem to play a style that seems to lend itself to him being more productive in the postseason than he tends to be in the regular season, which isn't to disagree with Rick. I do think the ceiling's probably not like Zach Hyman type heavy that can complement skill players or anything, but I still think this guy can help them win come playoff time.
I have the one group of players I have as much respect for as any others in the National Hockey League. Any player who comes to the National Hockey League and realizes he has to adjust his game in order to keep a job and to be effective at the National Hockey League level. You can't produce the offense that you could at lower levels. Well, then you adjust your game and you become the player. At least it looks like he's going to become the type of player that Vasily Podkolzin is becoming. I always think of, when I think of guys like that, I think of Brian Trotsky. I'm going way back. Brian Trotsky with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's a Hart Trophy winner, Art Ross Trophy winner with the Islanders. Goes to the Penguins. Mario's there. Ron Francis is there. He's got to become a bottom six defensive type guy, and he ends up winning a couple more cups. I love guys like that. Maybe he can become like that.
Well, the other name I'll throw out just in terms of guys who have to adjust once they get to the NHL, a name that always pops to mind for me is Manny Malhotra, right? Seventh overall pick for the Rangers. Doesn't work out there. Comes in and they're like, oh, we're sitting you next to Gretzky. You're going to learn and be a star for us. Then he bounces around and eventually establishes himself as just an incredible defensive center, plays almost 1,000 games in the NHL as a result of that.
I want to ask you about Seelovs, Rick. What did you make of his performance last night? What do you expect the Canucks to do with him down the stretch here? Has he earned himself another look in your mind?
Okay, so 7 shots in the first 2 periods, right? So he didn't have much in the first 2 periods, but man, was he good in the third. 14, right? He faced. This is a good thing for the Canucks right now because, look, it was last summer that I felt the Canucks were still thinking Seelovs. He was coming off the world. He did great for Latvia. I think they were still thinking in late August, they were still thinking of him being the backup this year. And then, Casey DeSmith fell into their lap and they got the veteran backup. What happens forward? DeSmith is a UFA. Mm-hmm. I don't see him taking a pay cut. He's got the numbers to go to July 1st and ask for a raise. And I don't see him going to Vancouver and coming back to Vancouver and saying, I'm going to take anything less. He's got some pretty good numbers to support his case. He's done. He's got a lot of points for the Canucks this year, Casey DeSmith. The whole overall picture for DeSmith, it's been great this year for the Canucks having a solid backup because you remember Martin, it wasn't getting it done with him. And then, they put him on waivers and they lost him. But this is a good situation for the Canucks. If they can see something in Seelovs that can show them maybe he can be the backup next year, who knows? But I still expect them to take a run at Casey DeSmith and to try and find and see if they could maybe get him next year too as well.
It was interesting last night that Garland and Seelovs were two of the stars for the Canucks. I don't know if you heard Garland's interview afterwards. I've forgotten about this, but Seelovs, Latvia, in overtime, last year's World Championships, defeating Connor Garland
and
the Americans at last year's World Championships.
With DeSmith and Net.
Had some fun with that afterwards.
And DeSmith and Net,
there you
too.
Go. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
That's right.
Very good, Thomas. You added another layer to it. Love it.
We'll let you guys go in just a second here, but Rick, I did just want to quickly ask, what's the latest you're hearing on Elias Lindholm? What should we expect over the final 5-6 games of the season here?
Well, the fact he's on the road trip is a good sign. And the fact he's skating on his own is a good sign. I still believe it's the hand, wrist area that's causing him issues. Can you get him in? Can you sneak him in a couple of games for the playoffs? Can he be ready for the playoffs? That's the big key, Jamie, is can he be ready for? But I like the fact he's hurt. Keep him away. get him 100%, and they're doing that with Demko. There is no rush with Demko. You know, reports of him playing Monday are not accurate. They're going to take their time with Demko, and, you know, with a couple, you know, I think this Saturday is going to be 4 weeks for Demko, so there's no rush there. They got a plan with them, and there's no rush with either one of those guys.
Guys, that's great as always. I think that's the least we've ever fought and squabbled amongst ourselves on a crossover. I don't know what was going on, but we just had a great time.
Well, we'll make up for
yes.
it next
week. We'll really get into it next week.
We need a line brawl. We need a line brawl like the one in Madison Square last night.
Yeah, we'll get Travis Green to produce our show.
If we have a line brawl, I'm going straight for Drantz.
I was going to say, we can get Dom and Henderson yelling at each other like Greener and Laviolette last night behind the scenes setting it up. Yeah. All right.
Enjoy your knuckle sandwich, Rick.
All right. See you guys. We'll talk next week. That is Don Taylor, Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. You can check out the show.
I just want it noted that I think Rick could take me.
Rick, I feel like, would be a lot to handle in a fight. I think Rick has that dog in him. There's absolutely no doubt about that Rick has that dog.
I feel like you'd try to trash talk Rick and he'd be like, huh? What do you say? And then you'd be like, no, I meant,
I'm just joking.
And then you'd be dead.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Because that's when he pounce.
I like to think that Donnie and I would just do the like, well, I guess we have to pair up, but we're just kind of like holding each other's collars.
Hold me back.
Well, everyone else is fighting, so I guess we'll do it. Well, these guys actually go at it. Okay, we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I do want to read some more quotes, parse some more quotes from Jim Rutherford in the interview up right now with Ian McIntyre at sportsnet.ca. And Jeremy Colliton joins us at 1 o'clock on the show. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.